KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
We can see the specific oil and gas jobs, but those projects are also driving some job growth in related industries.
Despite flat job growth across the state, oil and gas see an employment boost in the Arctic. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, April 8th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Alaska wildlife managers resume a controversial bear killing program to support Western Alaska caribou.
Right now we have a herd that is shut down where a large number of people in Western Alaska can't put caribou in their freezer right now.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Talk one-on-one with experts on mental health, nutrition, pharmacology, surgery, childcare, and much more on Line One, your health connection. Join our hosts as they discuss the health topics that matter to Alaskans with their guests and live callers. Email questions before, during, or after the live broadcast to lineone@alaskapublic.org. That's Line One, your health connection, weekly on your local public radio station.
Alaska wildlife management officials plan to resume killing wild bears this spring to promote the rebound of Southwest Alaska's Mulchatna caribou herd. The controversial predator control practice was on, then off after a judge's decision, and now back on again after regulators took emergency action in late March. KDLG's Margaret Sutherland reports.
Since 2011, the state has used intensive management predator control measures, including aerial wolf hunting, to support the Mulchatna caribou herd's growth. In 2022, the program expanded to include bears, leading to the removal of 175 brown bears and 5 black bears over the past 2 years. The Alaska Wildlife Alliance opposed the bear expansion and sued. Specifically, it said the Alaska Board of Game made procedural missteps around public noticing and public comment in its 2022 modification, and failed to show that it was sustainable for the bears. The Wildlife Alliance won. Superior Court Judge Andrew Guidi dissolved the program in March, ending predator control efforts in the Mulchatna region. Then, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game petitioned the Board of Game to essentially recreate the program through an emergency regulation, which bypasses standard public comment requirements and is effective for 120 days. The board unanimously agreed to the emergency designation, then recreated the program in a 6-1 vote. ADF&G biologist John Landseedle told the board the program has improved calf survival.
The caribou calves have shown a positive response to this treatment, with the two highest recorded calf-to-cow ratios in the West Mulchatna since at least 1999.
The department also sought to demonstrate that the program was not harming the overall brown bear population. It cited reports of increased bear numbers and past surveys showing healthy populations. Landseedle said the effect on predator populations in the area was negligible. The Mulchatna herd, which numbered around 200,000 in the late 1990s, has dropped to an estimated 15,000 caribou. The state's goal is to rebuild the population to a harvestable level, as subsistence needs for 48 communities have not been met since 2004, according to the department. The caribou hunt has been closed entirely since 2021. Board member Stosh Hoffman of Bethel was one of the yes votes in the motion to pass the emergency regulation. He commented on the need to restore the herd for subsistence users.
Right now we have a herd that is shut down where a large number of people in Western Alaska can't put caribou in their freezer right now. And it's not going to grow if they don't have calf survival. We're in tough times out here. A lot of things are changing. The salmon is in big decline. Our moose population, everyone knows it's going to tip over real soon, like new moose populations tend to do. When they crash hard.
Board member John Wood cast the only dissenting vote. He said he didn't have enough time with the material to make a decision.
I'm just not comfortable. In fact, I'm very uncomfortable with the process being followed. And I don't appreciate that, but it's nothing that the department could have done otherwise. The lawsuit came out when the lawsuit came out. And they reacted pretty darn quick, just not quick enough for me to make a decision.
Nicole Schmidt, executive director of the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, said the emergency approval further undermined public participation in wildlife management. She says she was shocked by the outcome.
You know, we were expecting that the board would call a meeting together, have a public comment period, something like that. We were not expecting this because it was just so outside of the realm of what is normal or what we could conceive as a next step. I mean, it's just so defiant of the court order. And so I think everyone's been scrambling to understand.
Schmidt said her organization is considering further legal options. She argues that the emergency regulation disregards the court ruling and repeats the same public process issues that led to the program being struck down in the first place.
Suffice it to say, the concerns that we had initially about this program have not been rectified at all. So we're certainly not done.
With the board's approval, ADF&G plans to move forward with predator control efforts in mid-May and continue into early June, depending on weather conditions. Reporting from KDLG in Dillingham, I'm Margaret Sutherland.
Job growth is flat across most of Alaska, according to new state data, but the Arctic saw a big spike last year. As the Alaska Desk's Shelby Herbert reports, that's mostly due to construction on oil and gas projects.
This month's report from the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development shows that job growth is up about 7% in the North Slope and Northwest Arctic regions. For comparison, most other areas of the state are in the ballpark of 2% up or 2% down. Dan Robinson is a researcher with the department. He says the Willow and Pikka projects, operated by ConocoPhillips Alaska and Santos, respectively, are boosting employment in the northernmost parts of the state.
And some of those jobs are in construction, some of them are in transportation. So we can see the specific oil and gas jobs, but those projects are also driving some job growth in related industries.
Meaning contractors and other nearby businesses that support the oil and gas fields are getting a lift too. The Willow Project is the largest of its kind to be developed on the North Slope in more than 20 years and has been embroiled in controversy for nearly as long. The environmental legal nonprofit Earth Justice, which was one of many advocacy groups that unsuccessfully sued to stop the project in 2023, characterizes Willow as a carbon bomb. But the project has received overwhelming bipartisan support from the Alaska legislature and the state's federal delegation in years past. ConocoPhillips Alaska Vice President Barry Romberg told the State House Resources Committee back in February that last year was the first major construction season for the Willow Project. And in spite of challenging weather, the company mobilized 1,200 workers for last year's winter construction season.
And 2025 is going to be even busier for us. So we'll have 2,400 workers on the slope. So approximately double what we had on the slope last year. And they're going to be progressing a tremendous amount of civil work.
Romberg said the company is planning on building out hundreds of miles of ice road and 30 miles of pipeline this year as well. At that meeting, representatives from both ConocoPhillips and Santos told legislators that they prioritize hiring locally. And according to Santos, about 80% of the workforce for the Pikka project was hired from within the state. Construction on Willow will continue after next year, and the project remains on track for oil extraction beginning in 2029. Santos is expected to complete its pipeline for the Pikka project by the end of this year, with its first oil extraction scheduled for 2026. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Miss Chemai is crowned at the Chemai Dance Festival.
I'm excited to be a role model for the younger generations, you know, being able to speak Yupik even though I'm half Gusuk and half Yuk, and also be a living, walking hope, I guess I would say, for the elders.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. We're glad to have you tuning in, and we'd love to welcome you as a member. Make a donation to this station and be a part of the public media family. Thank you.
Get your weekly look at the trends, policies, and issues that impact your wallet in Alaska with the Alaska Economic Report. From local businesses to fiscal policy to big industries like fishing, tourism, and oil and gas, I'll cover the high-stakes economic issues that matter to Alaskans all over the state. That's the Alaska Economic Report with me, Ava White, on your local public radio station each week.
The state of Alaska has charged 10 U.S. nationals in the small community of Whittier with voter misconduct and perjury. The charges say the defendants were born in American Samoa, which makes them nationals but not citizens. Alaska law allows only U.S. citizens to vote. The case is sure to get attention because non-citizen voting has become a hot-button issue nationally. President Trump has claimed, without evidence, that widespread voter fraud was one of the reasons he lost the 2020 election. Alaska Deputy Attorney General John Skidmore says the Whittier case began with a tip in December 2023.
There was an anonymous call that came to the Division of Elections about non-U.S. citizens that had registered to vote who were voting.
The charges also say that all 10 defendants voted or tried to vote in Whittier City elections or for the regional school board. Some are also alleged to have at least tried to vote in primaries. 32-year-old Matthew Pesay is among the few alleged to have made an attempt or actually voted in the 2020 general election. A Facebook account that appears to be his has several posts that praise or celebrate Trump. He did not respond to a Facebook message for comment, nor did several other defendants Alaska Public Media attempted to contact through Facebook. The charges say Pesay told investigators that he thought his wife had once said he couldn't vote because he wasn't a citizen. Skidmore says every year the state gets a few allegations of illegal voting and has charged about 5 cases in as many years.
By and large, it's not something that we find happens. Most of the investigations that we conduct result in determinations that charges are not appropriate to be filed. But in those cases where we do find sufficient evidence to say that crimes did occur, then we will file charges, as we have here.
Each defendant has been charged with at least 2 felonies. They have not been arrested, but have been summoned to appear in court. The Juneau Assembly voted last night to approve a Tidelands lease for a 5th cruise ship dock in downtown Juneau. As KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, it paves the way for its construction to move forward after a years-long process.
On Monday night, Huna Totem Corporation's plan to build a new downtown cruise ship dock cleared what was essentially the last hurdle that stood in the way of the dock either being built or denied. It was a win for tourism development when cruise ship tourism and its growth is an increasingly divisive issue in town. But Deputy Mayor Greg Smith, who voted in favor of the lease, says approval of the project doesn't necessarily increase the number of tourists in Juneau.
With or without this dock, we will still have 5 ships in town. This is not the vote, or this is not the question on what is the future of tourism, and that is still undecided and unknown. This is, you know, should we allow a 5th dock and the benefits that it brings, and in my opinion, it is worth supporting.
Huna Totem Corporation, an Alaska Native corporation that owns Icy Strait Point Cruise Port in Huna, plans to develop a piece of the Juneau waterfront along Egan Drive, next to Juneau's Coast Guard Station. Assemblymember Alicia Huskandes, who was the only member to vote against the lease, says she doesn't think it's in the best interest of the residents who will feel the impacts the most.
And so I ask myself, is this the right thing? Is there a rush? Have we truly done the planning to make this decision? And I do not think we have.
The dock will be constructed in Gastineau Channel, accompanied by a waterfront development called Auk Landing. The development will include underground parking, retail space, and a culture and science center. The Tidelands lease is set to last for 35 years. The Assembly's vote Monday night came after multiple rounds of public testimony, both in favor and against the development. Huna Totem and supporters of the new dock say it would help disperse tourism downtown and ease vehicle congestion. Kerry Crocker, who leads the local international longshore and warehouse union, calls the dock a big win for Juneau.
I spend about 2,000 hours a summer downtown. I'm the dock foreman for all 4 docks, and we service all the ships that are over 1,000 feet. I can assure you that the downtown congestion will definitely be dissipated with the new dock.
However, critics of the project, like Joan Wilkerson, says she's worried about the dock's proximity to her home and the health impacts the ships could have on the air quality. She asked the Assembly to postpone the vote.
Adding yet another ship pumping more poison into the air right under our windows is not welcome.
Part of the agreement with the city is that there can be no more than one ship docked there in a 24-hour period. The city has previously signed agreements with cruise lines that put in place a 5-ship limit in Juneau and limits the number of daily passengers that come to Juneau beginning in 2026. Huna-Totum is also required to provide electrified shore power within 2 years after a power line to connect it is built within 25 feet of its property line. Once the shore power is available, all large ships using the dock must use shore power instead of ship power, which uses fossil fuels. The Assembly added a few conditions that Huna-Totum must agree to before members voted to approve the lease. One is that the corporation must provide the city with assurance from the Coast Guard that the dock will not obstruct the icebreaker expected to be homeported in Juneau. Another condition includes only allowing ships with 4,500 passengers or fewer. Russell Dick, the president and CEO of Huna-Totum, was not immediately available for comment on the project's approval or to share more information about the development's next steps. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
A space technology company has signed a lease to build a satellite launch facility in ADAC. The deal was announced in a press release Thursday from the Aleut Corporation, which is ADAC's native corporation. Kate Gilling is a spokesperson for the regional corporation, and she says they've been in talks with the California-based space startup SpinLaunch for several years. The company finally signed a 100-year lease on a site in the Aleutian community back in October.
To finally to be at the point where we can announce and share it is very exciting.
SpinLaunch uses a centrifuge to send satellites into low Earth orbit. Instead of relying on fuel-powered rockets, the company's system spins payloads in a vacuum chamber at high speeds and hurls them into the atmosphere.
I like to think of it as just like a high-tech slingshot.
SpinLaunch first proposed this method as a lower-cost alternative to conventional rocket launches back in 2018. The company has since completed about 10 test flights using a scaled-down version of the system at Spaceport America in New Mexico. In recent years, it explored locations for a permanent launch site, which included a 2020 visit to Unalaska. That project did not advance past early discussions. ADAC is the westernmost municipality in the United States and was once the home of a naval airbase, which closed in 1997. A timeline for launch operations has not been announced.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education. If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Cantwell-based musher Jesse Holmes won the Kobuk 440 sled dog race, a challenging 400-mile race that runs through 6 villages in the northwest Arctic before returning to Kotzebue. At the finish line on Sunday, KOTZ's Desiree Hagen watched one particularly rewarding moment unfold for the race's runner-up.
About 50 people are gathered here, plus others honking horns from the comfort of their cars. It's late evening and about 0 degrees, but the spring sun is up and reflecting off the ice. Spectators are barely recognizable in dark sunglasses, seal and beaver skin hats, full snow machine bibs, traditional parkas, and balaclavas. As musher Kevin Hansen approaches, he spots his son waving among a group of children who rush out to meet him.
You know, I'm missing him on the trail. It's hard to leave your little guy out there.
He scoops him up and crosses the finish line with him in the sled. Hansen's parents, who have both been involved with the Kobuk 440 race since he was a child, beam with joy as their son and grandson reach the finish line together. Kevin's mother, Margaret Hansen, is dressed in a homemade fur-lined parkey. She drapes artificial flower necklaces over the lead dogs, Fiddler, Caveman, and Rambo. Hansen, who has completed the race several times, said this year was his team's strongest performance so far.
just so much community came out to support. I was surprised. There's a lot of people down there. I felt like I won the race, even though it was just for second place.
Next year, he says he hopes to race in his first Iditarod. Hansen finished about 2 hours behind the winner, Cantwell-based musher Jesse Holmes. For his win, Holmes will take home around $13,000 and a commemorative plaque carved from jade mined near the race route. It was Holmes's third consecutive 440 win and fourth win overall. Holmes also won this year's Iditarod and Copper Basin 300 races. Holmes crossed the finish line in Kotzebue with 9 dogs, guided by lead dogs Zeus and Titan. Holmes says as a whole, this year's trail was slow and long.
Man, sometimes in the middle of these runs, I think, why did I come out here? Why am I doing this? This is just crazy.
There were sudden heavy wind ground storms, whiteouts, sub-zero temperatures, and challenging snow consistencies, ranging from sugar to mashed potatoes. Veteran mushers say it was one of the more challenging years.
Then I get to the next checkpoint and I get so full of like everybody's positivity and like loving vibes that every time I leave a checkpoint, I say, I'll see you next year.
Holmes and Hansen praise their dog's ability to adapt to the difficult conditions. Holmes says in many ways he believes the Kobuk 440, even though it's half as long, is a harder race than the Iditarod.
If you can do this race, you can do the Iditarod, no problem. You know, this requires so much mental fortitude, so much toughness, and so much good listening to your dogs and reading your dogs and managing your dog team.
Many of the mushers arrived in Kotzebue with red, sun, and windburn faces after 4 to 5 days on the trail. Some said they were too sleep-deprived to talk about the race. Kotzebue musher Jim Borquin said on Sunday morning he got caught in a sudden snowstorm and lost sight of the trail. He was just 2 miles from a shelter cabin, but had to sleep outside along the trail in sub-zero temperatures. Borquin was one of the last mushers to finish, arriving Monday afternoon just before the start of the mushers' banquet. Mushers who arrive after the banquet are disqualified. 2 of the 13 starting mushers did scratch, Adam Lindenmuth and Quince Mountain. The race seemed to have a profound effect on Mountain.
I think that it comes through the rich history of the land and people here. People have been doing this here for thousands of years. You don't get that everywhere.
Mountain scratched an ambler after getting stuck in weather. At the awards ceremony and banquet, mushers received additional awards like handmade gifts from village checkpoints. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
One staple of the annual Chimay Dance Festival is the crowning of that year's Miss Chimay, who represents the Yupik, Chupik, and Athabascan people of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta at events and pageants throughout her reign. As KYUK's Sage Smiley reports, this year's winner ran on a platform of existing gracefully between the native and Western worlds so Yupik and Chupik people can thrive.
Around 18 hours before the crowning of Miss Chimay 2025, the 4 contestants were flying through the crowd at the Native Foods Dinner.
Every single Miss Chimay contestant is helping the elders with their food and bringing them to their tables, bringing them trays, bringing them tea or coffee and whatever kind of drinks they want.
That's 22-year-old Jolie Angukaganak Carlson, between ferrying cups of Tang and lemonade to elders scattered across folding tables in the Bethel Regional High School cafeteria. Spoiler, Jolie Carlson was crowned Miss Chimay the following day.
It's really rewarding and being able to help and talk to the elders after not being home, you know, for a long time going to college. It's really nice to be around them and helping them.
Service is one of the major pillars of the Miss Chimay competition, which focuses on uplifting the indigenous communities of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta through service, education, and leadership. Service is also a part of the judging process. Each year, Miss Chimay candidates are judged on personal interviews, essay questions, and service at the elders' dinner. Introductions to the Chimay crowd are also an important part of the competition.
Waka. Jolie Carlson.
I have been talking with many so lit now. La, manage to make me so graduate. La, 2020 me. Joe Gayak, Sophie Gayak, so chal. Ma, tut kaga katnga. Magluka, kina kamyunguluni.
It had been about 8 years since Carlson attended Chiang Mai. She went to Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka and straight to college at the University of Minnesota Morris, where she recently graduated with degrees in psychology and Native American and Indigenous studies, with a minor in English.
My mom was the one who really encouraged me to try for Miss Chiang Mai because she has always encouraged me to speak my language and be connected with my culture, and she's the one that taught me all of that, you know.
Carlson says it was a bit of a mental challenge to enter the competition. She says she's kind of a shy person who doesn't love talking in big groups.
I think the hardest part about it for me was my own brain and my own anxiety of like going on stage and like, you know, going into an interview.
And just like her family encouraged her to get into the competition, they helped her through the anxiety as well.
I would take a few deep breaths and remember who I am and remember who my mom and dad are and why they were encouraging me. And who I'm doing it for, you know, the younger generations and the older generations, the elders, so that they have hope for the future, you know, that our language still continues and that our culture still continues.
Miss Chiang Mai contestants pick a platform for their run. Carlson's platform was about walking and living gracefully between the Native and Western worlds, so Yupik and Chupik people can thrive for generations to come.
Focusing on the Native values that we have, like cultural activities and stuff like that, speaking the language while also making sure to stay in school and graduate and, you know, either go to college or training if you need or want to, and working so that you can live a comfortable life, you know, balancing out both of those lifestyles.
Carlson says she's tried to model that platform in her own life, speaking Yuchtun in the home with her family in Kuitlik and Bethel, while also focusing on her education and how she can give back to the community through her work. She's recently been hired to work as a behavioral health case manager for the regional Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. But she says finding out she got the job took a bit longer than expected.
They've been trying to call me, but I've been out manukking, you know, ice fishing every single day. So I didn't know that they were calling me because I didn't have service on the river. But yeah, that's what I'll be working as a case manager for now and then hopefully get my master's degree. Not this year, but in the following few years.
In addition to winning the title of Miss Chiang Mai, Carlson was also named Miss Photogenic. Her fellow competitor and first runner-up Sydney Lincoln of Tuksuk Bay was named Miss Congeniality.
I'm excited to be a role model for the younger generations, you know, being able to speak Yupik even though I'm half Gusuk and half Yuk, and also be a living, walking hope, I guess I would say, for the elders, you know, because they get excited when they hear me speaking Yupik because they didn't, you know, they don't expect that from somebody so young.
Although early in her reign as Miss Chiang Mai, Carlson encourages young women from the YK Delta to participate in the competition next year.
And encourage all the younger generations to continue to speak Yupik and continue to live their cultural lifestyles at home and be there for their families and their elders.
Carlson will compete in the Miss World Eskimo Indian Olympics, also called Miss WIO, competition later this year in Fairbanks. Last year's Miss Chiang Mai, Tatiana Tanka Corthius, went on to win Miss WIO and will compete in the Miss Indian World competition in late April. In Bethel, I'm Sage Smiley.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Margaret Sullivan in Dillingham, Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks, Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Clarice Larson in Juneau, Theo Greenlee in Unalaska, Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue, and Sage Smiley in Bethel. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years. Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.
You better count your money. You better count your money. Cash, even took the mayor's daughter. Now that bitch kidnapped, but she was with it, so I brought her. Then got myself into a whole heap of trouble. Double crossed by the law, so it's nobody to run to. Yeah, it's just me and my sawed-off shotgun. Outlaw, call him Leatherface. I'm headed for the west. Heard they got a couple banks in town that ain't been held up yet. Well, I ought to make it by sundown. I figure that's enough time for me to get the whole rundown. So I continue my mission. It's getting dark, so now I'm watching for them damn engines. They like to catch it, then they rob and split. I be a rootin' dude, shooting damn fool, protecting my chips. All of a sudden, I heard somebody rumble in the bushes. Stop my horse, whoa, Nelly. Who in the bushes? You better speak out, or I'ma let my shotgun song sing out.
Who is this? Hope to take the law. Draw out the bushes with my sawed-off shotgun.
Come on out. Right now I'm getting angry. Took a step back, cause it could get dangerous.
Please don't shoot us, just to meet the queen of hostility.
Then why the hell is you hiding them bushes?
I'm wanted in four counties for armed robbery. Killed two sheriffs, six of his best men. Wore my head, scoped two horses. Thought you was the loudest, why I jumped in the bushes.
Goodness, now she was hotter than the barrel of fire. But I could use her for the job, so I told her to ride. Come on.
May I ask you what you had?
I got a partner, got a plan for some dough. And if you're down, you can pick up yourself a pretty penny. Be in town in a minute, now be sure if you're with it.
We are before the sunrise, got a style, yeah, for your partner to ride. Hit the saloon for the moonshine, down for whatever, let's ride, let's ride.
These directions say we go to Tucson, Arizona. When we arrive, we'll cop a place we can bump. And meet my boy in the morning for details and hook up.
You better count your money.
Saloon in the valley. Now I done came a long way, and I don't wanna be late.
Time I make it time, you know we ain't.
Move on. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up. Move on. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up. Move on. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up. Move on. Giddy up, giddy up. You better count your money. You better count your money.
I'm peeping crazy's money, supposed to rent a saloon. So I assume it'll be trouble around here pretty soon. Glass across the room, I see this youngster getting ready to fight. But if he mess up tonight, I think the crazy just might take his life. So I approach him and I pause. Look man, I really don't want to brawl, but won't you chill before them laws? Come messing up this master plan. Since he already rowdy, I just asked him, man. Hey, you want some work, we'll partner, put in your bid. And by the way, now what's your name? They call me Lazy the Kid.
The name's Powder P, can I get a 12 gauge? Outlaw every day on the front page. Mr. Kid, if you give me the lowdown, me and Black Jack, you ready for the showdown? With two double barrels pointed at whatever, we'll stick together, I'm pretty clever.
So saddle up, jump on the bandwagon, because it's all going down. I heard a guy running the bar screaming crazy's in town.
Now when we get to this saloon, you don't worry, wait outside. Don't be stealing nobody's damn horse. Step inside the bar, Lady Kid, you son of a gun.
Hey man, I'm glad you made it safely, now let's go have some fun. And it's my partner Pilot, he's a young gun. Howdy.
Mighty glad to meet you, son. Oh yeah, you know I also brought a friend along. Meet the Quick, the horse peddler. Straggler, just met him.
Howdy partner, already got the horse saddled.
I hope you're good at robbing banks like you rustle that catawood.
Now y'all, it's gonna be getting dark real soon.
I think you're right, I say we move. Come on, let's move up.
Give me some of that ghetto cowboy life.
Count your money.
away. I'm rushing home. Part of me is here. Thoughts of what we were. Envy. Miles that stand between can't separate. No. You're all I hoped you'd become. Sister, I see you dancing on the stage of memory. Sister, I miss you. Fleeting visits pass, still they're satisfied. Reminders of the next overshadow goodbye. And our flames burn as one. Sister, I see you dancing on the stage of memory. Sister, I miss you. All I am begins with you. Thoughts of hope understood. Half of me breathes in you. Thoughts of love remain true. Here we are again, saying goodbye. Still we'll fall asleep underneath the same sky. You're all I see. You're all I knew you'd become. Sister, I see you dancing on the stage of memory. Sister, I miss you. Entwined, you and I, our souls speak from across the miles. Intertwined, you and I, our blood flows from the same head side. Half of me in you, thoughts of love remain true. I see you, I feel you when I close my eyes. I see you walking there, I see you dancing in my.
She doesn't own a dress. Her hair is always a mess. If you catch her stealing, she won't confess. She's beautiful. Smokes a pack a day. You can wait, that's me. But anyway, she doesn't care a thing about that. Hey, she thinks I'm beautiful. We'll meet Virginia. She never compromises, loves babies and surprises, wears high heels when she exercises. Ain't that beautiful? Meet Virginia.
Well, she wants to be the queen, and she's kills alligators. Mama works on carburetors. My brother is a fine mediator for the president. Well, here she is again on the phone, just like me, hates to be alone. We just like to sit at home and rip on the president. We'll meet Virginia.
Tune to 90s after the news. This is Virgil. This is KSDP. We'll have the Sandpoint City Council is having a regular meeting. We'll have that live on air at 7 p.m. Please tune in, and we will bring you your local democracy in action. There's plenty of room upstairs. You can come on down to the City Council chambers, second floor of the city building, and participate. If you'd like to follow along, the agenda and packet, the links have been posted at apradio.org. One heads up before I go back to the 90s after the news every Monday through Friday after Alaska News Nightly. Both of these events are going to be happening April 16th through the 18th. That's next week, Wednesday through Friday. Number one, they're going to have a, at the Sandpoint City Council Chambers, they'll have the UMV doing the DMV's work and setting up some real IDs. Secondly, this one is exciting. So the Alaska Tribal Cooperative Extension Program is partnering with the Palouse Harbor Tribe for a spring extension workshop. They're having a vegetable pickling class at the Sandpoint School. They have limited room for participation. There are sign-up sheets on the bulletin boards around town. This is next week, Wednesday through Friday, April 16th through the 18th. Thank you, Palouse Harbor Tribe. In the meantime, we got a few more minutes. We are going to step away from things like Train the Nixons, and we're going to go a little bit more like Mo Thugs Family featuring Bone with TLC, Ain't Too Proud to Beg, and Casey and JoJo, All My Life.
Got it.
We will fade out on TLC. Got Casey and JoJo coming up next. After that, we'll probably slide right into Sandpoint City Council. And 7 p.m. is usually the start time. I think they've done the run-through earlier today. And if you want to follow along, if you want to participate, come on down to the Sandpoint City Building. In the meantime, if you want to just follow along, the agenda and the packet are linked at sandpointak.com or apradio.org. Got a link straight to the packet on there on the front page, about three or four items down. Casey and JoJo right here. Keep in mind, Thursday, 2 p.m., we'll have the assembly up on deck. Check them out then.
Again, brothers, sisters, everybody. I sang. Gonna bring the flame, I'll show you how. Got a question for you, better answer now. Yeah. Am I